This is Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.TV.
We are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake! I drink it up!
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, say it again, Shal. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're in the Cold Reality Report. Shally's not going to be here today, so you're stuck with me. I'm Clint Richardson, former host of RBN fame, and got with me Patrick Jordan today to titillate your most deep and sensitive held truths. Welcome to the show, Patrick Jordan.
Hi, Clint. Did you mean famous or infamous?
Well, the answer is always yes.
Yes. I'm in pain. Don't do that, man. Too early.
So, you know, I thought we'd... by the way, Patrick's books are out in full... and those are at vaccinefraud.com. A heck with a website like that. Probably guess what we're going to be talking about.
Titillation?
Yeah, the titillation that's caused by such vaccines, absolutely. I wanted to start off today, you know, there's an interesting sort of theme, if you will, that we find within this industry of medicine, so-called medicine, more to the point, pharmacopoeia. Of course, pharmacopoeia, when we look in the Bible and in the etymology of the word, means witchcraft and poisoning. And I want to be very clear that that's exactly the very, very, very clear definition of what pharmacopoeia is witchcraft and poisoning. Now, those two words in and of themselves are also a little different than we are accustomed to at this point in history, the history that we are making. You know, don't think of witchcraft as what you're shown by the Jews in Hollywood who actually practice witchcraft. Don't think of the witches that you see on, you know, on Bewitched and that kind of thing. No, it's a little different. You know, think the Witcher's Cauldron. What pharmaceutical bins and steel colanders are creating, certainly, but not that old school type of witch. So we really do have to understand that these guys are practicing magic. It's just magic is so different than what they thought. And I think Patrick agrees with that assessment. At least I'm pretty sure the concept of dark magic or you know, that sort of thing, it really boils down to words more than anything.
Words. And isn't that part of The Conjuring? the spellcraft, spelling, the craft of spelling to cloud the mind. You know, I'm using, you know, like the terms within the dark arts, to cloud the mind, to create confusion, to induce somebody to do something, and in quotes, supposedly against their will.
Yeah. It is, just a quote here. It is often forgotten that dictionaries are the artificial repositories put together well after the languages they define. The roots of language are irrational and of a magical nature.
That's, oh, wow.
Jorg Luis Borges, prologue on El Otro El Mismo. That irrational nature is actually the English language, believe it or not. when it is compared to that, you know, we talked about the secret, right? That the societies are the keepers of the secret. And it turns out that the secret and the mystery are the same words. And mystery actually means art or, in fact, let me pull it up real quick. It's kind of nice having this big thing in front of me because I can...
This is interesting.
Just pull up these words. Mystery is a trade, art, or occupation. And in Louisiana, in the law of old, the word mystic actually meant a mystic testament as a will under seal. So you're talking about the will that you might leave your children your estate, right? So these words have a very different meaning than we might think. And generally, when we're talking about mystery as an art, a trade, or an occupation, all we really deal with are our words, titles, names, that sort of thing, nouns. And so when you think about what a secret society is, it's a trade, it's an art, it's an occupation. Art is another word for technology. Technology is another word for art. Art is another word for artifice or artificial. So this is why what we're really talking about is anything that is not of nature, not what some people might call, quote unquote, a creation of God. I hate to use those terms because I've been so despoiled by the religions out there and those who follow them that they speak their own artful language of religion. But, you know, if you get the notion that just by saying it's a creation of God, it's anything in nature that wasn't created by man, then it suddenly makes sense. So what is a mystery? It's that which is created by man, not natural. And that includes all language. That includes what we're speaking right now to try to communicate in these patented words that they own. And every word we speak, again, is part of their treasury, part of their thesaurus. So, you know, words are so important. And when we start looking at the words that are used in some of these studies, some of these studies that both myself and Patrick pull up on a daily basis from the NCIB, National Institutes of Health, the FDA, et cetera, the language used is, of course, the terms of art of the medical or pharmaceutical scientific language. And so it's like, you know, every art, you have to learn a new language, especially Patrick, I'd say, would really understand this. You have to learn these languages not just to know what they're saying, but to know what their intent.
Oh, yeah. That's the bottom line there, man.
So I'd like to read, Patrick, just to start off the show, a few things from both of our collective sort of captures of all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
Just to get us in the mood. talked about the prion. And I got to tell you, Patrick, I was shocked. I think we've... You know, I don't want to toot our horn or actually suggest that we have actually made some kind of impact with this, actually talking about this openly, which is just not done. But, you know, a couple of years ago, I talked to you about making a documentary about this because no one else is going to do it. You know, everything you watch is, well, you ate some beef and therefore you have mad cow disease or
Crohn's
disease, prion disease. And I'm like, come on, why is nobody talking about this? It's from the vaccines, right? I mean, it's so obvious that it's from the vaccines. And I say that because they actually tell you that in their own nature. And so I pulled up the YouTube, and I was like, oh, let's see what we have for prions on YouTube. So there was hardly anything. There was a couple of sort of, oh, you know, subscribe to me because I'm cool and I'm putting out this video. Here's a video about zombies and prions, right? And, cool. and that was about it. There was a couple videos. There was a Susan Lindquist actually did a talk on them, and she was very obscure, had just a few hits. There was there's a video game called, oh, I can't remember what it's called, but they show the you know, you can destroy the world with prions, basically. You can destroy the world with a virus, with this, with Ebola, and then you can do it with prions, and you basically control the news, and you control the outbreak until you've killed something ridiculous, 99%, and at that point you win the game. And I'm sorry I can't think of the name of it. Maybe I'll pull it up later and figure it out. But
sounds like real life.
That's
didn't sound like a video game, Clint.
It's just that I felt like what I was watching was a cover-up. And so yesterday I pulled up Prion in YouTube, and all of a sudden, mass amounts of video.
Oh.
And again, their news reports, I actually think they're starting to cover this up. I think what we're seeing right now, Patrick, is the transition from keeping this a mystery, keeping this a secret, to actually publicly disclosing it in a way that people will never figure out that it's the cause of all their parents and themselves and their early onset child's Alzheimer's and all that stuff, all the dementias, all the AIDS, all the, you know, people are never going to figure out that every disease out there is a prion disease. I mean, I say that, not every disease, but certainly most of them, right?
Nearly all of them, yeah.
Yeah, and when I say it's a prion disease, I don't mean it's just prions causing disease. I mean it's manipulation of the prion in several ways, or the injection of prions directly into the system through vaccination. And that's what I want to talk about today, because I want to make sure that there's some voice of reason out there that is actually telling people what the hell's happening. And what I'm seeing right now, Patrick, I believe is a cover-up. I believe we're starting to see the actual beginnings of a cover-up, of an official story on prions. I really do.
So that would indicate that we have created enough concern for them to even act, because power doesn't act unless it feels compelled to. Clint, before you start your reading, can I just cover a few amazing things? I've taken notes, amazing things that you brought up earlier. When you refer to the secret, and, you know, Oprah talks about the secret, that means she's a mysteries religion proponent. The mysteries, if they are art, then we look at the dark arts as being part of the mysteries. And the dark arts are called the occult. Now, I've got a telescope. And I don't have one, but they offered a device that you put in the eyepiece, and it is called an occulting disc, so that you can look at the sun and see the corona without, you know, having to look at the very body of the sun. And that's when I realized, well, what does occult mean? It means to cover up, covering up the mysteries, and that's how you keep it secret. And that series of words that I just strung together right now was spontaneous based on what you said, and it shows the sum total of your work, where you started with a word, and you understood that the Ouroboros, the serpent speaking itself into existence, was a continuous circle. You could start anywhere on the circle and end up where you started, because all these words are self-referential.
And that's what I found. And with the help of a guy named Arthur Kubarinski, who was on my show a few times, he's a guy up in Canada, and he said, when you're reading this dictionary especially, he's referring to the 1889 W.C. Anderson's Dictionary of Law, he said, this dictionary especially, because it's so forthcoming with information that you might not be posted in other dictionaries, some history in there, he said, when you're reading this, you have to keep one thing in mind. He said, as above, so below. Just remember that. And he said, whatever word you see, whatever words you're reading, you must read the word above it and below it. And you're going to find that they interconnect. And so whatever word you go to in the dictionary, you read the word above it and below it. Which means, essentially, that every word in the dictionary is above and below with a circle, like closed loop circuit. Every word has to do with the other in some shape, some way, or fashion. And that really helped me to grasp that notion of the not the snake eating its own tail, but the snake speaking itself into existence. Now I understand how this system works, because it's literally a trap. It's literally a circular prison that it's a matrix that doesn't let you break through it. They call it the bar, right? The bar association, which means to block you from going any farther. That's the whole purpose of citizenship. It literally keeps you within that circle so that you can never actually embrace or utilize the natural law. The natural law is called the unwritten law for a reason. It's not made of words. It's made of moral concepts that are self-evident to all men. That's the purpose of the Bible. It's self-evident knowledge. All the history, all the crap that's in the Bible, you can just pretty much ignore unless you actually understand it. But the message is what is lost through the history. So the Bible is a self-evident truth. When you get down to the nitty-gritty, when you actually define the terms as their original intent, it's a really amazing book I've found, which is what my book is about, comparing that to the legal, or what we call the law of the land. So, in fact, I'll tell you what. If I may indulge myself, Patrick, I'd like to read, because of you and our past discussions, I'd actually like to read out of my chapter in my book about the secret.
Dude, right on.
So in 18... excuse me. Coughs are not included. In 1826, Captain W.M. Morgan was apparently disappeared via ritualistic murder for revealing the supposedly great mysteries of the Freemasons. I actually have his book. He was said to be brutally tortured before his life was stolen from him, being supposedly given his due as bound under that deadly oath of keeping the secret. In his published work entitled Illustrations of Masonry, short title, one would expect by this brief introduction that what Mr. Morgan revealed was some great and ancient hidden knowledge or some untold mystery that could never be solved without inside knowledge. And in a strange way, that is exactly what he did. For within his short treatise on Freemasonry, he revealed the ultimate secret. And when I say it's the ultimate secret, I truly mean this is the ultimate secret. Presenting the most cherished mystery of all time. But it wasn't at all what you might think. Just what was this great and powerful secret that only the initiated few are allowed to behold, the elect? Quite simply, he revealed that there was no mystery. There were no ancient secrets that beheld truth. The ultimate mystery was only that this whole secret society was based solely on a ritualized fakery, on the idea of a simulation of secrecy, of a mystery with no source. A simulacrum, which means a copy without an original. If you can wrap your head around that. In other words, the only secret kept by Satanists, or those which are adversarial to the truth, are lies. The secret is that we are controlled by lies, and it is that very mystery of their perceived dark magical power to wield the big lie over us that is so jealously guarded. And so Captain Morgan's most horrific crime was to reveal that Masonry's big secret, one for which that brotherhood would literally kill to protect its mystery, was that modern Freemasonry was and is today nothing but petty organized crime. They're just pirates. And their only power is the power of lies, of the lies they keep. For there's no hiding that which is self-evident truth. nothing you need to know, in other words, is hidden. And so the veil of secrecy is kept not over the truth, but over the power and origin of the lie. And so many men have tried and failed in their seeking of the true nature of those societies of the secret, simply because they were searching for the wrong thing. Only he who seeks power and glory through organized lies and deceptions may find the truth about these artificial brotherhoods. Anyway, it goes on to talk about the, you know, the mystery of Babylon, the mystery of the Shemitah and the Jubilee cycles and all that shit that we're basically told as being organized crime. And that's all it is. It really is all, you know, when a Mason goes into court, I have this quote somewhere. When a Mason goes into court, he gives a sign, or he's, and the sign is actually with words. He says, you know, help a brother out or something like that. The judge also being a Mason, the sheriff also being a Freemason, like Sheriff Mack, for instance, they let why do cops always get off for their crimes? They're Freemasons. The highest order of the Freemasons is organized crime. They got to let their brotherhood go when they give the sign that they're a Mason and they're in trouble. Why do you think judges hardly ever put police officers in jail? And when they do, chances are they are not Freemasons. So what is the secret? The secret is the keeping of the lie that is told, confirmed, and ratified as truth.
I like that.
If you can,
it's the opposite day.
Absolutely, everything is. That's magic.
Isn't it?
Magic. That is the definition, the very definition of the dark art, of the dark mystery. Right? So if you can wrap your head around that, what we're really talking about, I mean, I call myself, my nickname for myself is Toto, because I'm pulling the veil away from the fragile old man who controls the Wizard of Oz, controls the lie, the image, and the lying words, and the lying voice that the Wizard of Oz is portraying. And the only secret he has is his secrecy, is the secrecy of the fact that everything he does is a lie. That is the Wizard of Oz. That is magic. That is Freemasonry. And not just Freemasonry. Freemasonry is just one sect of a much larger thing. And I get people all the time, Patrick, that say, you're talking about the Vatican. Why? How can you talk about the Vatican without talking about the Jesuits? You know, the Jesuits control the Vatican. And I'm like, you know, have you ever actually looked at the Jesuits? The Jesuits are an order of the Roman Curia. They're part of the frickin' Vatican. I mean, literally, officially, they were formed, started, and exist as part of the Vatican. They are not some secret society. They are not secret in any way. Everybody knows about them. Their creeds are quite well known. They're part of the Vatican, so to say that they control the Vatican is like saying the Federal Reserve controls the frickin' federal government.
You stole my Federal Reserve. I was going to throw that in there. You know what it's like? It's like saying, my liver rules my body. No, it doesn't. My spleen does.
Oh, man, I envy you because my stomach lately rules mine. if you could just wrap your head around that everything that we hold sacred, and when you look up the word sacred, it actually...
Here we go.
It actually means cursed. That was my favorite that I found. Sacred means cursed. In other words, whatever you worship, whatever you hold sacred that is not of nature, that is, in other words, not of God, then you're holding something artificial, something that's art, over the reality it represents. That is a cursed way or cursed state of being. That's all churches. That's all religions. That's all everything out there, all societies that hold, the Masons will hold the three sacred books, which are the Bible, the Talmud, and the Quran. Those are the three sacred books of Masonry. But they don't actually hold the book itself, or the words, the message of the Bible. They hold the book as a token, which makes the book cursed. Did you ever see, Patrick, did you ever see the Book of Eli, the movie?
No, I've heard of it.
Well, the interesting thing about the Book of Eli is that it's a battle to find the, basically everything's destroyed, and there, it's a battle to find the last Bible in existence.
Oh.
They know it's out there, and I won't give away the whole story, but they know the Bible's out there, and so you've got this evil villain who knows the power of that he who wields the Bible and uses it incorrectly can hold, referring of course to the religions, the popes, and everything else. If you wield the Bible as a weapon, it can be a powerful weapon of untruth, because you're using it in that way. You're not going to the actual message. The guy who's carrying the Bible is on his way out to give it to someone in the only place. I think it was. I won't tell you the plot of the story, but it's the only place where someone is actually trying to reestablish a library of knowledge. So he's carrying the Bible out to the good guys, basically, who want to rebuild society according to the original message. Right? Really good movie. A little violent, but it's really good. And so the bad guy is willing to kill and, you know, torture and murder for this book, because...
Ooh, nice analogy. Wow.
If he wields the Bible, he will have ultimate control over all people, just as rulers have for so long, because they keep the secret of the Bible. They keep the mystery to themselves in the priest class, and don't let the people, you know, they won't even let the people read, for God's sake. So it's a post-apocalyptic thing. I just thought that was a perfect example of the dualistic nature of the Bible. And so the one guy is the spiritual or correct way of using the Bible, which is very humble and that kind of thing. Then the other guy is the guy that's seeking it for power. He's holding it sacred because he wants to use it for its cursed purpose. And so there's always that dualistic nature of all things. So the word sacred actually does mean cursed. So when you're talking about things like sacred geometry, for instance, you know, you're holding the number value, just like in money, you're holding the value of money of something over its actual priceless nature. It's priceless possibilities. You know, you're holding the space that sacred geometry can predict over the actual space, which is why we see these horrible cities and horrible dumps and horrible oil refineries and all these ugly things out there, because we're holding that design, that sacred geometry, and that sacred the arts of masons, the building with hands, over the nature it's covering up, over the possibilities of the thing that is so sacred, it becomes cursed. And that really, again, that's one of those things that really helped me get over the edge of understanding and comprehension of why the Bible is such a cursed book, because people wield it for their own power instead of wielding it for the power of all others and the wealth of all others, despite themselves. If that could just change, everything would change. If I was always intent on making you rich and everyone out there in the priceless beauty of everything out there, and everybody had the same idea instead of always being in competition and trying to gain wealth for themselves, always ensuring that everyone else had something when you didn't, then imagine that. Imagine how life would actually be if that was the case. But everything is, as you say, opposite day. Everything is cursed. The money is cursed because we use it for personal gain. Everything is cursed because we're always trying to hoard and build our own estates instead of that of others. This is a main tenet of the Bible. And this is the shit that's missed by most people when they read the Bible. They transfer the words into their own best interests. And that's the opposite of what you're supposed to do. Anyway, that's, again, there I go again, ranting.
So let's get you back on track. You were going to do a reading. Is it the material that you had sent me?
Yes.
Okay. Just so you know, just in case it slipped your mind where we were going.
Well, so Patrick, after all his books, and everything. We were gonna. We're still probably gonna do it at some point in our lives, if our lives last that long. Is to make a documentary, a basic overview of his books, and of my work, basically talking about the prion, or as you call it, the prion agenda, and of course the nature how it has literally created sort of a zombie apocalypse, if you will, and Richard Rhodes' book, Deadly Feasts, you know, Pulitzer Prize winner, Rhodes wrote a book about prions that we talked about, and it was about that Kuru outbreak that literally made people zombies, and that was a few of the actual videos that you'll see on YouTube are about prions and zombies. We're not talking about the undead. We're talking about automatons, people who can't control their actions because the prions have burrowed and created holes in their brains and caused Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, autism, that kind of thing. So one of the, and as far as I'm concerned, it's the only real outbreak of this is caused by what's called xenotransplantation. Or allotransplantation, but I like to focus on xenotransplantation. That's spelled with an X, by the way. And I'd just like to read you this because this is straight from the website of the FDA. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration website, in its entry for xenotransplantation, just to give you an idea of what they do know compared to what they tell us. Xenotransplantation is any procedure. Any procedure that involves the transplantation, implantation, or infusion into a human recipient of either A, live cells, tissues, or organs from a non-human animal source, or B, human body fluids, cells, tissues, or organs that have had ex vivo contact with live non-human animal cells.
Oh, wow.
Tissues or organs. So in other words, when they take aborted fetal tissue to grow vaccine substrates on their cell substrates, they'll mix it with some animal like a pig, you know, or blood from a bovine serum, that kind of thing. And all of a sudden you have a xenotransplantation being put back into your body in the form of a vaccine. Literally proteins and prions specifically, are being shot into your body. That's what they're talking about here, but they're also talking about the transplantation of hearts, pig veins, and animal parts into the body, which, again, is the spread of prions. And this is, again, why it's talked so badly all throughout history, this notion of mixing animal and human, or even human and human parts and blood. The blood is supposed to be sacred. When you curse the blood by adding something to it, you're holding that sacred, which is not. You're cursing your body. Although the potential benefits are considerable, the use of xenotransplantation raises concerns regarding the potential infection of recipients with both recognized and unrecognized infectious agents and the possible subsequent transmission of their close contacts into the general human population. Of public health concern is the potential for cross-species infection by retroviruses, which may be latent and lead to disease years after infection. Moreover, new infectious agents may not be readily identifiable with current techniques. Now, I'm going to have you speak on that for a while. But first of all, what is a retrovirus? What is a latent disease, or what they call a slow virus?
Okay, we had a family lawyer, and you'd ask him any question, and he says, okay, let's just back up a few steps here. He would say that to anything. He could say, hey, nice weather we're having, and he'd go, okay, let's back up a few steps here. You know, what do you mean by weather? But the first part of this quote that you gave, just on the opening of xenotransplantation, Clint, that language was so precise, and their choice of phrases within their terms of art was so clear that when somebody like you or me reads it, you know that these people have the most complete control over not just the language, but the concepts that they're conveying. And then, you know, I'm going to address your question. The second half of that quotation that you gave shows that even though they're equivocating on, well, you know, new infectious agents may not be readily identified with current techniques, they're saying that current techniques haven't been defined. Current techniques available to who? To them? They already know what the hell is going on. But to the microbiologist off the street, to you or me, it's all magics, because this kind of technology, at least the Russians have always been at least 50 years in advance of what the United States has been capable of. So imagine that you were in a situation where somebody had 50 years advantage over anything in science and technology. They would be like spacemen, you know, visiting a caveman. And so this is not only concise, precise language, it is the biggest shuck and jive that you ever seen. So let me, you already defined that they're defining xenotransplantation can be anything from GMO foods to vaccines. But the second part was, okay, and this is covered in my books, the potential for cross-species infection. And then they say by retroviruses. Let's just stop before they get to retroviruses, Clint. And this is, you know, where the lawyer would say, okay, let's just back up here. Let's just go back to cross-species. Because my books, the last five books that I wrote, they credit the red hens. And it's the story, the little kid's story about the little red hen that wanted to bake some bread. And it asked all the farm animals to help. And none of them would help. And so she baked the bread, and then all of a sudden they're banging on the door, hey, can we have a piece? And you're part of that process. You know, there was quite a number of people that contributed to the data collection and analysis. And what we found, and it's gotten to be this simple, Clint, and I can't convey this to people. I can't get through the barriers in their mind. We are finally at a point, we, meaning you and me and the red hens, we're at a point where we have an idea of, let's put cross-species transmission, prions, into a search, and my God, the floodgates that open up. And what happened was, you and I and the hens were in conversation about, well, can this stuff jump kingdoms? Because it used to go kingdom, phyla, class, order, genus, species. So when this said potential for cross-species infection, species, well, you know, that's too close. When you're going up into mammals are no longer a species. That's a completely different classification. And when you take bovine serum, which is the liquid portion of the blood, not the cellular portion, and you put it in human cell culture to make a vaccine, and the vaccine has a virus from an insect. This is xenotransplantation. It's made beyond cross species to the point where we put in inquiries into the internet and came back, well, you can actually have, and I'm not going to tell you because I need to sell books, you can have a certain process happen in the soil where prions can be transmitted through a process in the soil to plants, and the plants can then transfer it to the cow, and then the cow can transfer it to the man. And it's like, my God, you know, we have broken what is called the secret of the Mason's word, where you simply start with any word. You know, the legend was that if you knew the single word, you would understand the mysteries of the universe. Well, I have reinterpreted that since 2008 to be, you take any word. And see, that was my introduction to the Ouroboros of words being self-referential. You take any word, and if you follow it long enough, you will come to that realization, because that's the other thing that I forgot to mention before we started down this road, and this is a perfect segue, Clint. My introduction to all that brought us here, the listeners and you and me right now, was a single phrase, serum sickness. That's why you and I and everybody listening are here right now, because my word was serum sickness, and it brought us exactly where we're at, beyond cross species to crossing kingdoms. You can go from the dirt to a plant to a cow to a human with this pollution.
Well,
what's the? Go ahead.
That wasn't your word, was it? That was something you got from actually doing the research and finding this notion that serum or blood or whatever the liquid is the injection into the body is what is. So, I mean, you're really, what you're saying is that you found the key word and you turned it into a monster.
And, you know, it wasn't my word. All this nonsense is given to us. It came out of the Merck Medical Manual 16th edition. And it's like, oh, look it. You go to their sacred, their cursed books. Merck Manual, oh, that's a devil's book. You go to their cursed books, you find their language, and their words will damn them. Because I have publicly come out for the past 8 years that I am the anti-AI, anti-artificial intelligence. I am against all that is against what we call, erroneously call, life. And therefore, I use their books, their information, as you do. You know, we go to the CDC, we go to the NIH, we get their information and their language, and we use it as a weapon against them.
Well, and you know, what you're doing right now is exactly what I've been doing with both the code, the U.S. code, the legal law, Roman law, and the Bible, is to read the words and go in and actually define each concept or each word so that you understand what's actually being said, because these things aren't written for us to comprehend. We don't know this language. This language is written in a way that, as you said, is meant to sort of give you an idea of what's going on, but never to actually give you any knowledge.
To a cult, yes.
That's the
to cover up. That's what it means, to cover up. So you can see the aura, the corona of the sun, but you never see the sun in its totality.
There's too many trees. I can't see them.
Where's that chainsaw?
So, yeah, okay, so again, you got a retrovirus. It says the potential for cross-species infection by retroviruses would be latent and lead to disease years after infection. That's what we're talking about with prion disease. That's why years after the vaccine is introduced into the body is when you might, even decades, is when those prions actually get woken up somehow. We're not really sure what naturally, if anything natural, actually wakes them up. We do know that ultrasound wakes them up and makes them start devouring healthy prion cells. But we're not sure, I don't think, unless you've got some wisdom on that, what causes them to lie dormant so long and then suddenly wake up and start devouring the brain and cause all these dementia-like diseases.
Okay, so let's show that single sentence implicates them in the knowledge and understanding of the entire process, and they were just codifying it in a way that is ambiguous and leads to speculation and gives the impression that they are somehow not complicit with and have plausible deniability for the sequela, what follows of what they just described, because they know for a fact that bovine serum, we're just going to take the fluid portion of the cow's blood. Bovine serum is used as a nutrient source in cell culture of vaccines. Boom, that damns them. They're damned. What do you find in bovine serum? Among other things, you can have, and I'm going to have to look this up on the fly. Let's see. mammals are not a species delineation. It's farther up the chain, I'm pretty sure. So, you know, we're beyond cross species. You know, a cow and a man, not species. I'm going to look that up to confirm it. We're jumping these boundaries by huge chasms, that they know that they're transferring things from one living creature to another that should never be there. And what a retrovirus is, go ahead.
Cannot happen in nature, is what you're saying. There's no possible way for this infection that they're talking about, this latent disease, these retroviruses, to get in your body, even by eating. I don't think it's possible at this point, except that they've caused leaky gut. It's not possible for you to get this type of disease unless it's injected, it's forced into you. There's no possible way in nature this can happen, and that's the whole point behind magic, is to cause that which is unnatural to become and seem natural. It's why the entirety of the United States is as patriotic and delicious.
I can't across the board make a categorical statement that it couldn't happen. What I will say with complete confidence, and that's a control word, by the way, is that they're doing this on purpose to make sure that there's no way that anybody can avoid being infected. So this is their way of ensuring that everybody across the board gets infected, because they don't want that odd straggler that for some reason avoided all obstacles and came out completely unscathed. So a retrovirus is genetic code, RNA or DNA, that actually inserts itself into the nucleus and the genetic code of the host. That means no longer is it like a little particle that came to you on a droplet from a sneeze, and it worked its way through your body, and it attached to a cell, and it burrowed into your cell, and it used your machinery to take over and make copies of itself, and you had a head cold. Not even close. This stuff has now become you. And so then this becomes the xenotransplantation, the xenograft, because it is not something from the outside that your body can recognize and fight. It's something on the inside, and your body tends not to attack itself. So if these genes, these retrovirus genes, are part of what your code is, then your body's going to go, oh, yeah, that's Hank. He's the retrovirus. And it will, on activation, then make copies of itself, and then your body will say, what the hell is that? Throw some prions at it. And then that's when that cascade happens. And so what they're talking about is not just retroviruses, because in my books, especially Prion Agenda, I do exhaustive analysis to show that they know, and they classified scrapie, that's the sheep prion disease. Scrapie is a lentivirus, which is a retrovirus. So the USDA is saying, in their terms of art, that yes, we know we have infected the gene code of as many human beings as we could possibly get at with a retrovirus, which is the progenitor of prion disease. And it says may be latent, meaning, you know, just rests until it's activated, and lead to disease years after infection. And that's the definition of what they used to call, erroneously or maybe not, the slow virus, because they didn't know what to make of prion disease. So the slow viruses are, by definition, these retroviruses that, when activated, start the prion cascade. And the process of degeneration that you were referring to, Clint, is a 30 to 50 year process for the slow virus as it was defined. But in our work, you know, our collective work, what we found was there's two other genes one gene will allow the prions to progress slowly. Another gene, if that's activated, man, you're dead within a couple months. So the slow virus model is basically saying, you know what? And this is why I worked my ass off to get these books done, because I can feel my brain slowly going. I'm nowhere where I used to be before I passed the half-century mark, which is, by the way, it's a telomere chromosome cap-driven process of when you pass 50 years, I think they engineered it into us, our bodies start to break down. It's a countdown timer to death. You have that movie where people had like a timer on their arm or something. We're living it, man. And so I worked my ass off to get these books done, because if I had the slow version, what that means, Clint, is not that, oh, yeah, by the time we're 70, our brains will start to be etched. I'm saying that this process is so slow that it's making Swiss cheese in our heads right now.
Yeah. Thus, the latent or, years later comment, again, got to read between the lines on all this, everything the government says.
Mm-hmm.
I read you a couple of the quotes. I got this quote and I didn't source it, but I know it was an official source because I put it in here. Vaccines, this is speaking, I believe it's FDA, it's talking about the different forms of what's called xenotransplantation, but it's specifically talking about the different ways in which this can happen. Now, we always concentrate on vaccines. Your website is Vaccine Frog. We don't think about other injectable medicines, i.e. pharmacopoeia.
Oh, wow, man.
About human growth hormone, for instance, which is made of bovine stuff. We don't think of insulin, which is very, very popular, unfortunately, unwittingly and unwillingly popular out there, which is an injectable drug for diabetes, right? We don't think of these things and all the other injectable drugs out there. How about the drugs that are specifically made of human blood for hemophiliacs, factor 5, factor 6, factor 7, factor 8? Factor 8 is well known to have been using it was Bayer Company, which used to be part of the IG Farben big Nazi corporation, right? So the Bayer broke off, and it's still part of that IG Farben. They just changed the name, and now it's in America, and they were using blood from prisoners, which is illegal, to make their unscreened blood from prisoners to make their factor 8, and the factor 8 was on the news actually, and they said that it had caused a lot of people to come down with HIV or AIDS, whatever that is. I hate to say HIV anymore, but they caused all these diseases from using this bad blood from prisons, because it was much cheaper to rape a prisoner than to voluntarily rape one of us. Vaccines. Some parts of cows, including blood, enzymes, and amino acids, are used to grow the bacteria and viruses needed to make certain vaccines. Insulin. Insulin sold in the United States isn't derived from cattle, but you're allowed to import beef insulin from other countries if you follow specific guidelines. Because there's no way to guarantee the safety of imported insulin, talk to your doctor about the best way to obtain insulin from sources outside the United States. Right, talk to your doctor. Do you know that every doctor I've talked to have never heard of prions? No,
either they haven't or they're pretending they haven't.
No, these are friends. They look at me. They get that cognitive dissonance look in their eyes that I'm crazy. Verivax is the one I really wanted to get to. This is from the actual insert of the vaccine. Just so you understand, they know exactly what's happening. They're telling you, and you have to understand that government has created a system where as long as they are warning you in a specific language that doesn't really tell you what's happening, but gets them off the hook, because they do warn you. All right, every time you get a vaccine, it comes with a massive massive insert that tells you all the problems that this vaccine is going to cause. The fact that you go to a freaking nurse or doctor or insulin or anything else, the fact that you go to a doctor or a nurse or whatever, and they give you this shot or they prescribe it to you and you give it to yourself, the fact that you're not reading these inserts is your consent. Okay, that insert comes for a reason. It is to warn you that what they're giving you is probably going to kill you later on. It's going to give you a prion, a latent, a dormant disease state of infectious prions that will infect your healthy prions, cause spongiform encephalopathy in your brain, which is, makes your brain Swiss cheese or like a sponge because of these prions. Okay, they're warning you, and because they're warning you, guess what? Government says, well, we told you so, you're off the hook, vaccine manufacturer. That's the truth, folks. That's how it works. I outlined that in my first documentary. ViraVax. Varicillavax virus vaccine, the live virus from Oka and, of course, Merck Pharmaceutical. Merck, by the way, what's his name? Howard Merck? Or what was his name? He actually received... He received a massive amount of the war chest that they basically stole from the Nazis, i.e. Nazis. We call them Nazis. I don't think they call themselves the Nazis, but from Hitler's regime, if you will. A lot of that money from the breakup of that IG Farben company went to George Merck. George Merck was originally the head of the U.S. Department of War of Biological Weapons, and then it became Merck Pharmaceutical. It's kind of like Monsanto becoming our food source when it's the creator of all these poisons and deadly weapons, right? So, ViraVax this is directly from the insert, folks. Listen to this. ViraVax is a preparation of the Oka Merck strain of live attenuated varicella virus. The virus was initially obtained from a child with natural varicella, then introduced into human embryonic lung cell tissues, which are taken from aborted fetal tissue, then introduced into human embryonic lung cell cultures, adapted to and propagated in embryonic guinea pig cell cultures, and finally propagated in human diploid cell cultures from Wister Institute, WI-38, which is a cloned child that was aborted and recreated, and the cells keep being cloned. Okay, so you've now mixed human embryonic lung cells with embryonic cells from a guinea pig, and then back into the diploid cells of aborted fetal tissue. Okay, further passage of the virus for varicella vaccine was performed by Merck Research Laboratories, that should make you feel better, in human diploid cell cultures, MRC5. They have a bunch of these that they keep cloning and reproducing. Again, aborted fetal tissue. That alone should stop people from taking a vaccine, but okay, I don't know what to tell you. We have no moral compass anymore, so, you know, why not? Put it in you. Each 0.5 milliliter dose of vaccine contains the following, and of course it has a massive list of shit that you shouldn't put in your body, but specifically the one thing that it says is this is what we're talking about. This is the spread of modern disease right here in this one sentence. Each dose of vaccine contains the following residual components of MRC 5-5 cells, including DNA and protein. That is what's making us all sick, folks. That is what's getting into our body as a infected, quote-unquote, protein or prion. It's going in there. It's trying to reprogram our body into what it is, which in this case, we have a different species of human, and we have a different phylum? No. What do we have when we're talking about crossing?
Yeah, I just looked it up. It's class. So kingdom, phyla, class. It's three down from the top. Okay. It's that broad. Right. We're within the mammals. It's that broad.
So we now have, in this one vaccine, we have two forms of human DNA and blood and protein, and we have a guinea pig cell culture all mixed together, and they warn us here that the residual components of those cells that were all grown together, including DNA and protein, cannot be filtered. There's no way to filter out microscopic shit out of your vaccine. Sorry to tell you. And they're telling you this. They're giving you the warning. They don't do this because they're being nice. They're not doing this because they have some moral conscience that they want to warn you. They're warning you. They're putting this as a disclaimer so that when you take this vaccine, you know, whether you read this or not, you are informed, folks. You have been fucking informed. That's the whole point. The whole point is to inform you. If you don't read the law and you still act in the person of the law, you still take the vaccine, you still, you know, open a banking account, you still do all these things, you use the signature of your person that belongs to government, you are consenting to everything that binds under law that signature. You're consenting to the entirety of the U.S. code. By taking this vaccine, you're consenting to the entirety of the FDA law and all the protection agencies they've set up to protect these vaccine companies, which, by the way, if you're not familiar with my other work, it's on the financial reports of government, especially pension funds. And when you look, you're going to see that government is the main investor in all of these pharmaceutical corporations, both domestic and foreign. The main investor, which means that they have shareholder proxy votes. They are the ones voting for who the board of directors are, and in turn, the board of directors votes for the president of the company. This is a total control structure. This is, for all intents and purposes, fascism. It is where government controls all corporations. That was my first delve into the true conspiracy that is government. Okay, so this is not just, so government creates all these laws to protect corporations. And so people have the fallacious notion that governments own the government. You cannot own government. Government is not something that is owned. It's public. Okay, government owns corporations through stock investment. That's the important thing. And through that stock investment, you have corporate governance, which means that the shareholders get to vote for what happens in the company. Well, what happens when government has been taking all your taxpayer money, all the non-governmental things that it does, like golf courses and all that shit that's got, that somehow government takes all that money, puts it into private associations and invests through pension funds and other investments into every corporation on earth, gives corporate bonds or loans, low interest or zero interest loans to all the corporations. That's where all your money is going, because it's not your money in the first place. Okay, you're a user of money, but you're not an owner. Whatever you have in your bank account can be taken tomorrow. Whatever gold you think you're holding can be taken tomorrow. It's not yours, because you are a person of the United States. You're a freaking slave, voluntarily so. So the whole system is set up to protect these vaccine companies and these banks and everything else that government owns through stock investment. You got to understand that this statement, this warning, this disclosure is specifically designed to say, to allow Merck and Oka to say, well, we know about it, yeah, but we put the warning in there. We're off the hook. We're off the freaking hook, because government allows us to do this. That's the loophole. That's the point of government, is to allow the worst possible things to happen in these corporations that they own and control and govern through corporate governance. You see, it's one giant conspiracy. There are no other conspiracies. There's only one. It's called government. And if you don't get that, you're never gonna ever be successful, trust me, in proving that there is a conspiracy in government, because government is the conspiracy. You'd have to shut down the entire thing, because the whole thing is a conspiracy. There's never going to be any freaking conspiracy. There's never going to be a judge that rules against government unless they want it to happen. It's just not going to happen. So what you're going to have to – the only way around this is to get out of it. I'm going to say that over and over. You got to get out of her. You got to leave her. You got to stop being silent. You got to stop using its property. You got to stop using its money. You got to stop using its property. That's the only way you're going to get out of it. That's the only way that something like this can be foisted upon you, is if you accept the person is getting vaccinated. Not you. Your person is required to be vaccinated. They only care about the person. What happens to you doesn't matter. All you are is capital, human capital. You're a commodity, nothing else. When you're attached to this person, all they care about is the person because they know that you're surety for that person. You're in a performance contract, a performance debt. Whatever they tell the person to do, you're going to do because you're insured. You're the one that's insuring it. When they say, hey, that person needs to go to jail, what are they going to look for? They're going to look for the agent, the attorney that is operating in that person. That's you. That's your body. That's why they put you to labor in, you know, it's why products of the United States are now made in the USA. They're prison labor products. We're in such a dire situation, purely built on ignorance, but more importantly, it's built on this secret, this notion of the lie being protected by disclosure and being protected by U.S. law. The liars are protected. The truth tellers are disposed of. Welcome.
Clinton. Are you there? Clinton, it's 10 o'clock. I think it's time for you to take your blood pressure medication. Did you hear what you did, though? Because, you know, I was listening to you. I take notes, and I'm going like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We started off, you know, like after the first quarter of the show, we started off with your topic of prions. Of course, prions got us into vaccines. Vaccines got you into government and informed consent, and government cannot be mentioned without the money component. And what that did, this is the continuum. This is the Ouroboros. You can start anywhere on the circle. I started with serum sickness, and I discovered the complete and total corruption of government. You could have started with the complete and total corruption of government and ended up with serum sickness. You're just going around in a circle, and it's all there. All you need is that entry point.
Well, yeah, but see, here's the kicker. We think that the government became corrupt. Oh, it traded. No, folks, it was born in conspiracy. That's the problem. There is no fixing something. Now, what they offer, and this is the brilliant part to me, what they offer is remedy. Now, remedy means you're still a slave to it, but it's paying you off for your troubles.
Yeah.
So money means nothing. They can print as much money as they want. If you get $1 billion from government, it's just going to print more money, and it's going to charge all of us for your happiness and wealth. Congratulations, you asshole. You didn't do anything. You got paid up. This is why all the conspiracies go away, because people get paid off from government. They secretly or publicly pay people off for their troubles. No one ever does anything about it. They get money and
right.
They happily ever after with their frickin' ailments or their lack of feet or whatever it is,
Ooh. Of
husband, their lack of wife, their lack of children. As long as you get frickin' money, everything's okay, right? That's remedy. That's not a solution. That's not an end of contract. That is a remedy. And money buys even the most honest and good man. Money is the ultimate destroyer of everything. And this is the perfect example.
Clint, this is extemporaneous because I don't know that we've ever talked about this before. I don't want to put you on the spot, but how do you feel about the Code of Hammurabi? Because, you know, if you take it in its literal sense, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, it's like, what do you mean offer me money? You killed my child. I want your life.
So in my research, you know, I always bring a different aspect to it, and we have discussed this before. The notion of death always has to be looked at from both angles. Now, from reading the Code of Hammurabi and all of the different gods that have been kings and magistrates and whatever, you'd think that everybody in their kingdom would be dead.
I'm in pain. Don't do that, man.
But truly, death, the words death and execution is what they use in legal terms to mean the execution of a contract, meaning the contract is fulfilled. It's been executed, okay? So when we're talking about execution, we're talking about capital punishment. Capital means head, okay? It means that you know, when we're counted by capita, all right, per capita. If you have capital punishment, it means you're no longer ahead to be counted. It means you've been exiled from the – it doesn't mean you've been killed. It means that your artificial structure, your status in society has been cut. You no longer have a class. You no longer have a status in society. So all these times that you read about death, especially in the Bible, you know, you'd think that there was a freaking zombie apocalypse in the Bible with Lazarus and everybody, Jesus getting up from the dead. It's not that kind of death. It's a spiritual death and a civil life. And when your civil life goes away, then you have a spiritual rebirth or awakening, and you're outside of that legal entity. So all those times that you see the word death being used and capital punishment and execution, they're not necessarily saying that they're killing people. They're exiling them. They're excommunicating them. They're abjuring them from the realm, making them werewolves or outlaws, but they're not necessarily killing everybody. Like I said, everybody'd be dead, it seems like, you know, if you actually look at the notion of that. But so you got to look at the terms as they're intended, not in the vulgar way that we just think death is death, that's the end of life. But there's civil life. You got to understand, the life of your person is your status in society. It's a corporation. The corporation lasts as long as your physical life lasts. When you actually die, your person also dies. Or, as we've seen so many times, someone will be absent for 7 years or unheard. They come back and their person has been declared dead. They've been declared dead. They go in front of a judge and they say, "What the hell? I'm alive. I'm right in front of you." And the judge is like, "Sorry, you've already been declared dead." Well, they're not talking about the man. They're talking about the person. They're talking about the status in society. So that's the same thing. That person has been executed. That contract has been fulfilled. It's no longer viable. The person is dead. But the man is sitting there going, "Please, please, please let me have status.
Wire me back into the Matrix." Yeah. "And don't come back before that 7 years, or else you'd be liable for back taxes."
Yeah, so exactly. You have to understand that is, you know, and whether that's the case in the olden days. I mean, personally, I think they were a lot more sophisticated back then than we are now. And these concepts of excommunication and abjuring the realm are ancient. They're very, very, very old. So I really look at them. I look at these things now, and I remember everything's figurative. Everything's metaphorical in the legal system. The only thing that gets real is the fact that we are in surety or performance debt for that status. So whatever the status the person is told to do, we have to do it, because the person can't act. It's a puppet. It has to have a puppet master. We're the puppet master. It's our servant. But our servant is, of course, a subject of the master, which is government. It's the principal, we're the agent, right? It's the executor, we're the executor, or vice versa, whatever, however it goes. So, you know, we have to know our place. We have to understand that. We have to understand how these disclosures affect us. And again, the second we sign anything, the second we act in the person of, if I act in the person of Clint Richardson, if I show my license, if I sign something, if I use my Social Security, I am literally saying I accept the entirety of law, even the biological weapons code that says they can kill me at any time for research purposes.
So in order to kill the beast, come out of her, oh my people, Mystery Babylon, we have to exit the harlot. Will that kill her? Because isn't this entire system based on tacit consent?
Well, what happens if you unplug all people from the Matrix? What possible good can the Matrix be, this simulated reality that only works if real people are inhabiting the persons, the fake images, the self-projected images in the Matrix? What can possibly the Matrix do if there are no people? What can the military do if all soldiers, quote-unquote, the flattering title of soldier general, what if they all quit at the same time? What if they all just exited their false artificial persons, called soldiers and captains and all these flattering titles? Do you think that that those persons would somehow get up and fire guns at you? There's no... The void... there's no, you know, to anything artificial must have something real to operate it. That's the whole purpose of these artificial statuses. So, yeah, it would die. And that's the point. You're never going to defeat it with guns. You're never going to defeat it with violence. You're never going to defeat it. You're going to defeat it with forgiveness. You're going to say, okay, we've all been participants in this. We've all done wrong. We're all guilty. We've all consented to this. We've all been silent. It's time to leave her. We must leave her and let her die herself. That's not treason, okay? That is not a violent something that they could put you in jail for. That is the essence of the common law. The Bible is the common law. You got to understand that. If you don't understand that, it's never going to be fixed. You there?
Yep, I call that a pregnant pause, letting everybody just take it in.
A pregnant pause. That's funny.
So let me recap what I could not do from memory. Kingdom. And this is why I broke my books down into the Rise and Fall Kingdom Plantae, Rise and Fall Kingdom Animalia, is within the kingdom of Animalia, animals. You have phyla, which include chordata, which is things with the backbone, and other things like protozoa, but we won't go there. You know, that's like single-celled organisms. If we go to class, then among the many things in the different classes would be things like mammals, which we're part of, birds, reptiles, amphibians, you know, and we'll just skip the other things because mammals was what we had referred to earlier, Clint. So we're three divisions down where the mixing of not species, you know, I'm referring back to that USDA, like, Black Magic's expose. They're talking about cross-special disease. It's like, pull your head out. We're talking about cross-class disease because within mammals, and there's many others, but my high school biology book, for goodness sakes, had primates, of which we are considered part of. Carnivores, which you could lump cats and tigers and dogs. And then, what's the other one? Rodents. And I thought that, you know, that's kind of interesting. They because they had to choose things to put in their little mini chart. They chose primates for humans, carnivores and rats. It's like, I wonder if they're given like a little wink and a nod there. But see, that's order. So kingdom, phyla, class, order. Before we get to the breakdown of the different kind of mammal. And now let's look at this from a biological point of view. You'd say, okay, well, lions and tigers, you know, that's kind of out there. But the house cat in the 1970s, and it shows how old I am, I remember there was a big scare about FIV, feline immunodeficiency virus, or FLV, feline, forget what it is.
And leukemia.
Yeah, leukemia virus, thank you, which was literally the retrovirus cousin of what they later recharacterized as HIV. And so, you know, it's like, wait, you know, you're making a jump from primates to carnivores. No, they're making the jump in a petri dish, man.
I know. How could it possibly have gotten humans? And now it's human immunodeficiency and human leukemia. How could that possibly have happened? I want.
And that's what you're talking about with this disclosure, with this officious aura of like authority. They go, oh, well, you know, we think it could and it can, but it probably won't. That's a pat on the head to a little kid. And this is basic human psychology to reassure, oh, Clint, don't worry about it. That would probably never happen. Let's go back to sleep. It's just a thunderstorm. Don't worry about it. You know, Pat's here to take care of you. Everything's going to be all right. And that really, that is the hypnotic trigger, is everything is going to be all right. And that's why they're doing the damage control. You know, if we have initiated concern over prions, that's why they're doing the slow speak, and prions are coming out in the news, and they make a wink and a nod that, you know, Alzheimer's and prion or Parkinson's is maybe prion related, and it could be contagious, but, you know, don't worry about that.
Now, we learned a valuable lesson in the movie Poltergeist about this.
Oh, really?
All right. You know, mom comes in, comforts the little boy, and he's like, I'm scared of the thunder. Well, just, you know, if you count the thunder, then, you know, then you'll know if it's getting closer. Don't worry if you count. And he counts the thunder. Next thing you know, a big tree breaks through the window and starts eating him. The next thing you know, a big clap comes to life and tries to kill him. You can't not worry about these things. The lessons that Jew Steven Spielberg has taught you.
Well, this just take a really short jump. So we went from Animalia to Chordata, you know, it's backbones, to Mammalia, to Carnivora. And within Carnivora, we got Felidae and Canidae. So that's cats and dogs. And our good list member, Mimi, she came across some information. She goes, did you know that they're putting Cocker Spaniels in flu vaccines? And it's like, what the hell? Since 1959, they've used, like, a little doe-eyed puppy, a Cocker Spaniel, to be the cell substrate in which to grow influenza. And so she's got, like, this really mean streak in her, and she says, you know, I'm going to tell all my family that it's being shot up with little Cocker Spaniels.
Well, obviously, you know, you tell them it's aborted fetus. They're not bothered. Maybe the puppy thing, you know. But, you know, we talked about, like, people coming to your door, and they're like, we're your children. We're CPS. We're government. We're authorized to take your children. And people are like, oh, okay, just don't hurt me, okay. But when someone comes and, like, even threatens to, like, harm or take your cat or your dog, like, go get the shotgun, you're like, you mess with my dog, my cat, I'm going to kill you. Oh, my children, that's okay. Take my children, I understand. But my dog, no way, man. You hurt my dog. Oh, you harmed my child. Oh, I understand. You hurt my cat. Oh, my God, I'm going to kill you, right? It's like the bizarre part of our culture that we value the pet more than our child. I got to say that.
I can't focus, man. So we went from family, Felidae and Canidae, to genus, which breaks it down into Felis and Canis. So we haven't even gotten to species, because Felis and Canis is just cats and dogs. And cats can be like house cats or tigers or lions. That's how broad that is. But then when you get to species, and this is why I'm like deconstructing the USDA thing, because the USDA knows what they're talking about, man. And even though they're giving you like 90% truth, the garden hose up your ass and turning it on full bore. Because Felis Leo is the lion. Felis domesticus is the house cat. Felis tigris is the tiger. Now, Felis was the genus. And all the USDA was saying is, yeah, you might get a little bit of retrovirus action between, like, lions and tigers and cats, oh my. And Pat Jordan is going, now, wait just a fucking minute. You know, I've been doing this for 8 years straight. And I'm going to take you from species to genus to family to order to class and say you're going across mammals, but you're also going across all the way back to kingdom, because protozoa was in there. And are you going to tell me that you're going to scrape something out of a monkey's butt, put it into a petri dish, and you're not going to get a protozoa in there that you can't filter out? So this is lions and tigers and bears, oh my. All life is being mixed in a blender. And one of the things that is allowed for in patent law since the 1970s is you can patent a life form. So what if they say, oh, you know, you consented to this vaccine that rewrote your genetic code. We own that code. Therefore, we own you.
Yeah, I've been writing about that as well, is that eventually you know, the notion, again, we're back at the notion of self-evidence or self-existence. We're right now we are wholly ambiguous. If we have a name, then we're identifiable. If we don't have a name, number, and mark, then we're not identifiable. We can't be.
Oh my God.
Oh, and so what happens then? And the notion of God in the Bible, the notion of Jehovah specifically, which is the one true God, etc., is the self-evidence of nature. It's the self. It's reality. It's everything that you can, that you know, is truth by its self-evidence. I am self-evident. Clint Richardson is not self-evident. Clint Richardson is a creation of government that has to be proven to exist. Everything artificial, ironically, has to be proven to exist. Hmm. Our names, all our statuses, and all that. But, you know, I'm self-evident. Do you not bleed if I thus punch you? Is that not a self-evident truth, right? So, what happens then when all of a sudden I'm not self-evident? What happens then, as you say, when all of a sudden all these patented nanoparticles and replacement parts and machinery is suddenly a part of my being? It's been fused, just like when your Christian name, your good name, your God-given name.
Yeah, fusion.
The surname, which is the state name, suddenly the state name becomes higher than the Christian name. In other words, the legal law becomes higher than the moral or religious or scriptural law, the spiritual law. The common law is destroyed, and you're under contract law, which is against common law. So, right, what happens when all of a sudden you can be identified biometrically to be a mixture, literally a machine that is part human, part patented copy machine? Well, all of a sudden, then your self-evidence has been disappeared. Your ambiguity can no longer be shown, and you are automatically known to be. So, in other words, your person, your status, your legal entity is now actually a physically fused part of your body. That is true slavery. That is the ultimate goal. That is true slavery, when you can no longer identify yourself as something unidentifiable.
You did a show on like wearable tech that added to that the concept of the individual living being inseparable from a manufactured part that was then claimed as equipment by the maker. Let me read the beginning of that. You see, we haven't even gotten past the USDA xenotransplantation, Clint, and you did it again. Xenotransplantation is any procedure that involves the transplantation, implantation, or infusion, infuse, to fuse in. And that's what you said. We then become a fusion of all of these horrific pollutions. They infused it. They fused it in us. It is then, and this is where I got the shock, because my last five books are all about this new concept that I introduced, that, okay, an old Jordan maxim has always been, if you didn't make it, you have no idea what is in it. So you're given a vial of flu vaccine, and they say, we want to shoot this into you. Well, what is it, flu vaccine? And you read the label, all you see is a clear fluid. You have no idea what's in that. And even though it might say little Cocker Spaniel puppies with really sad-looking eyes, well, that may or may not be in there, even though it's on the label. You didn't make it. You don't know what's in it. But what they know, because they have lot and serial numbers that are able to be tracked electronically with barcodes, they know exactly what lot and serial number went into what human being, and that then was your, I wrote it down, the name, number, and mark. Lot and serial number of vaccine then becomes a trackable system of what they infused into us, which then makes us their property.
Lovely. A perfect example is that is something like polysorbate.
Love me some that.
Polysorbate. Alternative names polyoxyethylene sorbitan monocleate or oleate, excuse me, or tween 80. Now, tween 80 was one of the early ingredients in vaccines back in the polio days.
Mm-hmm.
Tween 80 has a massive list of actual ingredients, which is fascinating. It's in my documentary as one of the things I was showing. I don't remember if I actually talked about it, but description. And I'm also fire thickener and humectant created by adding an oleic acid molecule to sorbitol. It is a thick liquid that is commonly used in non-dairy creamers and whipped cream to prevent separation and allow whiteners to dissolve. Along with polysorbate 60, it is known to be a commonly contaminated with a 1,4-diosane, which is known to cause cancer in animals, often derived from petroleum. Found in ice cream, sherbet, mayonnaise, and salad dressing. polysorbates are generally regarded as safe, but their common contamination with toxic chemicals that can cause cancer bring down their safety. Aha, that's from the U.S. Food and Drug Association, the ones who approved it for an additive in food and vaccines, of course. So, you know, you look at this shit and you're like, what the hell? How could they call that food? How is that food? Well, it's not food for the human body. It's food for the AI. It's food for technology. It's food for vaccine ingredients. You got to understand, they're feeding us shit because we have shit in our body that needs the shit that they feed us in these vaccines and medicines and foods. They're not feeding us. They're feeding the artificial intelligence, the living, non-living organisms that they're putting into our bodies. I don't think people get that.
I can't pull it to memory right now. And, you know, I got to apologize. I just got done with a 3,000-page tome. There is a connection between polysorbate and Morgellons. And so when you talk about the AI, see, in my mind, and this is another concept that I introduce in my latest books, is that of continuum. In my mind, just like our conversation, you can't go from Morgellons, oh, that's a separate topic, to transhumanism, oh, that's a separate topic, to autism, oh, that's a separate topic, to prions, oh, that's a separate topic. My God, they're connected, completely connected, in the background with knowledge and malice aforethought, because when we read the USDA xenotransplantation thing, they had all the terms of art there that showed they know completely and explicitly what is going on, but then they make the beg-off that, moreover, new infectious agents may not be readily identifiable with current technologies. May not, and current technologies. This is because I took a course in logic and critical thinking. These are called weasel words, where you can wiggle out of a statement made by not stating something categorically and definitively. But everything else that they put in there shows they know exactly what the hell is going on.
But at the time when they need to prove that they disclosed it, they can say, well, here's our definitive statement.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, So what you're saying then is that the reason that they cause and literally force doctors to choose a specialty is to keep them dumbed down so that they only focus on their specialty, never realizing the continuum of disease.
Oh, beautiful. Right there. Yeah. I work with a lot of people that have physical ailments, and we discuss their condition, and we always involve their physicians if they have them in any, like, decisions that the person makes to try to improve their health. And quite often they'll bring a question to a doctor, and a doctor will say, well, you know, I can't answer questions about your thyroid. You're going to have to go to your endocrinologist. And I'm thinking, because, you know, I studied on my own, I have no degrees, I make no claims, studied on my own nutrition and health for well over 30 years. It's like, what the fuck do you mean you can't answer a question about thyroid? The thyroid bone is connected to the brain bone, is connected to the gut bone. You know, this, it's just, it's unconscionable to me for somebody not to sit there with somebody in need and answer a direct question to improve their health instantaneously with no thought of remuneration, because they're already paying for the damn doctor visit, and then referring them off to a specialist. And quite often these specialists, like an endocrinologist or a gastroenterologist, will say, I don't know the answer to that question, or I don't know what's wrong with you. I don't know. That's unacceptable.
Well, unless it's literally saying, I don't know, I'm going to give you to someone else. I'm going to put you to someone that actually knows, but...
that never happens. Correct, yeah.
Does know, and second of all, who's allowed to know? Not your doctor.
Well, and see, this is that entree point. This is where I understood the meaning of the Mason's word. If you had, this is the legend, if you had the Mason's word, which intimated that it was a single word that once you knew it would open up the mysteries of the universe, I reinterpreted that to be any word. If you, and this is like pulling a thread on a tapestry, if you pull that single thread, my God, the whole thing starts to fall apart. And well, if you gave that power to a doctor and the doctor had integrity, they know what we know. You can't not know it. That's always been my point. I don't give anybody any quarter on saying, oh, well, we didn't know. You have the ability to know, and you chose not to investigate.
That's scary.
Because, you know, who's Pat Jordan and who's Clint Richardson? Hey, and I'm just a farm boy from the damn grain ghetto.
I'm a blackjack dealer, counter worker, sound editor. Yeah, how do I know this, right? Yeah, actually, yeah.
he goes, I got your farm boy, and I'll raise you a blackjack dealer.
Right. I got to step away from the mic for a minute, so I'm going to read a quote and just have you talk amongst yourselves.
Okay.
This is a quote from a guy named Jonathan Sarfati, Ph.D., it was a New England Journal of Medicine promotes anti-theism is basically the name of the title of the article he wrote. And he said something that really caught me. This has so much meaning behind it. And, of course, as with anything, it can be taken both, you know, dualistically. But he said, eaten, like when you eat blood, eaten blood is digested into its components. So it ceases to actually be blood, and the body reuses the components for different things. So it breaks it apart as the digestional system is supposed to, and it picks out what it wants and discards the rest. Then he says transfused blood, which is what we're talking about, transfused blood is not digested, but functions as blood, whole blood, with all its vital properties for life. Now, perhaps this can really explain the difference between eating beef and injecting beef serum or blood into the body, because really what this is telling you, and people will say, oh, that's so beautiful. Now, the Bible also, in Leviticus, these are wholly misunderstood concepts in the Bible, of course, especially Leviticus. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, right? There's no life without the blood. But what I want you to talk about, and I just got to step away for just 30 seconds,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is this notion that, yeah, you can eat all the blood you want. People do it all the time. They go hunting. They freaking take a curly straw and drink the blood of which they kill. Okay,
true.
If that's your thing, go ahead. But the point is, it's being digested. It's being broken apart by the very systems that are designed to protect you. But if you inject blood into you, the blood remains whole, and it acts, actually. So if you have pig blood or cow blood or insect blood or guinea pig in you, which would technically, you know, come along with any proteins or, you know, whatever, then it's going to act according to its imprint of life. it's programmed to cause pigs to live, not humans. It's not the same. It's similar. It's very similar, but it's not the same. And when your body sees it, of course, it reacts to it as a foreign thing, even though it's similar to your own. But it's not the same. And that's a very important maxim, is that similarity is not sameness. It never is. It never can be. It never will be. Right? So I want you to talk about that, because what we're talking about is a life force that is not your own being put into and contaminating your blood. Blood is sacred. Blood has always been considered the most sacred of things. And in law and in medicine, the whole concept is to corrupt the blood. In law, it's called attainder, corruption of blood, so that you have no actual legitimate heirs in the bloodline. In medicine, it's done through what we're talking about, through vaccination. So talk amongst yourselves.
All righty. First thing that comes to mind is the ancient Chinese principle that qi has many manifestations. The ancient Chinese ideogram, see, the stuff that the Mao introduced in whenever he was in power, were codified under the communist government, and he only allowed, like, let's say for the sake of argument, 6 million symbols that he approved. And they were modified from the ancient ideogram. So the ancient ideogram for qi, life force, energy, was a symbol that intimated the steam that rises off of rice that's been cooked. And that could be translated to, and, you know, I can actually, I can relate to this. If I was living in ancient times and I didn't have my high school biology book, if I didn't know about physics, I would be every day in awe of the fact that on a cold day, you can go out and see your breath. And so the steam coming off the bowl of rice representing qi was the equivalent of seeing your breath on a cold day, because, let's face it, you can watch the limbs of a tree or grass move in the wind. You can feel the wind, but other than getting dust in your eye, you've never seen the wind. So back in the days of codifying life, just trying to make heads or tails of it, the ancient Chinese hammered on these almost mythical concepts and symbols for what they were trying to interpret without a physics textbook written by the CIA. So blood, then, within the Chinese martial arts system, is a carrier of qi. And we can actually explain that today with science, because blood is what? Well, guess what, folks? It's many things. So we have to do a Clint Richardson and do the, okay, let's take a step back here. What is blood? Well, blood is the serum fluid component with red blood cells that are non-nucleated, which means they don't have DNA in them. They do carry the hemoglobin that carries the oxygen. And then there are white blood cells. And in my first book, ICD-999, I came across what I feel is a revelation that we are our immune systems, because our immune systems are made up of white blood cells that not only carry DNA, they carry our genetic code, but they are memory cells. Just like the brain has cells that can form memories, white blood cells have memory of who we are, because we present antigens on our cell surface that say, it's me, it's me, it's me, and anything that enters our body, and that was the gist of Clint's quote here, anything that enters our body that is foreign to the body, the white blood cells go, yo, homie, what's going on? What you doing in my neighborhood? And then they take care of business. And so the entire scope of what vaccination is all about is to erase that self-memory, that self-recognition, and supplant it and change it and make it into something completely different, so that we are what? Here's a really scary word to put in your lexicon, tolerant. So you are now tolerant of things that are injected into you when your body should have mounted gang warfare against anything that dared to enter your neighborhood. And so I personally feel that, you know, this kind of tolerance is us being like I've got an echo, so I'm sorry. It's hard to concentrate. We're being compromised and changed into something completely different.
Well, it's a, I mean, inside each one of us is World War III.
Thank you.
Or the world war is happening within our bodies. It's not a, it's a silent war with silent weapons, right? Quiet weapons.
Very nice. Hey, Clint, I got echo. Is there anything you can do at your end?
Test for echo.
Check. It's gone now.
Oh.
Good.
Oh, that was me. Honest. I did that. I'll take credit. I heard on the news, and that was a very, 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 I knew you could pull that one off because I couldn't. And that's the notion of the prion, right? It's going, and it's like, I'm a pig prion, you're a human. I'm sleepy, I'm a sheep prion, you're a human prion. I'm gonna attach to you, fool you into accepting me, and then I'm gonna misfold you. I'm going to evolve you into something that you are not. Isn't that really what's happening?
That is a Clint Richardson reinterpretation that nobody, to this point in time. And, you know, I'd crunch data all day. Nobody's ever brought that concept to the fore. And it makes sense because we have within ourselves the ability to either refold or dissolve and recycle our own prions. And if that is not able to be accomplished, then that means that these mutants either came as xenotransplantations, or the mutation that created them was so foreign to the human being, and you got to ask now how the hell outside of vaccines does that happen, that we our normal body processes no longer work. So you always have to look for, well, who caused this disruption? Because it's not normal to the body. It's not evolutionary. It's not a survival trait, you know, acquired over millions of years. It's death, man. It's a freaking 30 to 50 year death sentence.
So what? I got a few more quotes to read, if you don't mind, just to make sure that we understand that they understand what's happening and that they are not publicly telling us. They're disclosing it, but they're not doing it in any way that can make us. Well, they're not doing what we're doing, essentially, right?
Correct.
So this is from Erling Norby. It's a book called Listen to the Music, The Life of Hilary Kaprowski. I'm sure you're mm-hmm. with that name. Perspectives in Biology and Medicine, Volume 44, number 2, Spring 2001. It's just a quote from one of the guys that worked back in the, I believe it was the Wister Institute, right before Roe versus Wade happened, where abortion was legalized. So we didn't have to, it was illegal to import a fetus material from aborted fetal babies because that was the law. Roe versus Wade was to change that law. And it's just interesting to note that Miss Roe actually never had an abortion. They tricked her into being the name of the Roe versus Wade. She's actually a very, very prominent Christian activist against abortion. She never had an abortion. They just used her name, and she's got some. You know, if you look up her, she used a false name. Her real name is Norma McCorvey, and you can look up quotes by Norma McCorvey. You can check her out. You really should, because she's highly, highly against abortion, and she has come out and said they fooled her into. She never even like was part of the court. She just went in there to testify, and that was it. So the lawyers basically tricked her into doing that whole thing. And the purpose of that, again, was, you know, they're having to basically illegally, but with license, import aborted fetal tissue or do their work in Sweden at the Wister Institute. Here's the quote. One of my duties as a young student in the laboratory in Stockholm was to dissect human fetuses from legal abortions and send organs to the Wister Institute. Such material was the source of many important studies of cell lines of the Institute, such as Leonard Hayflick's study of WI-38. Now, WI-38, this quote is back from the 1950s or 60s or something. WI38 was one of the listed components in Merck's aborted fetal tissue ingredients in its vaccine. That's how long they keep these cell lines alive. All right? So you're talking about something that's cloned, and who knows what that's doing. This is from L. Hayflick and P.S. Moorhead, the serial cultivation of human diploid cell strains, experimental cell research, 1961. Tells you how old it is and what a big business this actually is, this business of aborted fetal tissue. You know, forget the moral argument or the pro-choice, pro-life, which I find it interesting that the pro-choice movement always says that the pro-life movement is anti-choice, but no one ever says that the pro-choice movement is anti-life. The isolation of characterization of human diploid cell strains from the fetal tissue make this type of cell available as a substrate for the production of live virus vaccines. Other than the economic advantages, well, what does that mean? Well, we're just throwing babies in the trash, so we really don't have to even pay for them. We can just pick them out.
Wow.
Aside from those economic advantages, of millions of aborted fetal tissues that are just thrown away. Such strains, in contrast to the heteropoloid cell lines, exhibit those characteristics usually reserved for normal or primary cells and therefore make the consideration of their use in the production of human virus vaccines a distinct possibility. Now, that was back in 1961. It tells you how long these evil bastards have been doing this. American Journal of Diseases for Children, Virus Production and Biological Control of Live Attenuated Rubella Virus Vaccines, Volume 118, et cetera, et cetera. Explant cultures were made of the dissected organs of a particular fetus aborted because of rubella, the 27th in our series of fetuses aborted, the 27th aborted fetus. This fetus was from a 25-year-old mother exposed to rubella 8 days after her last menstrual period. 16 days later, she developed rubella. The fetus was surgically aborted 17 days after maternal illness and dissected immediately. Explants from several organs were cultured and successful cell growth was achieved from lung, skin, and kidney tissues. It was then grown on WI38, the one we just read about. The new vaccine was tested on orphans in Philadelphia. Let me say that again. The new vaccine was tested on orphans in Philadelphia. Orphans in Philadelphia. That's no really no different than testing it on prisoners in jail, right? One more for you. I'm so disgusted. So fucking disgusted by this. This is from the FDA. FDA article from the FDA website that I copied over. It's entitled Designer Cells as Substrates for the Manufacture of Viral Vaccines. Now, when we say designer cells, again, that is not something natural, folks. So when they're growing these things, they're altering them into basically, you know, let's make a monkey cow or a human a cow mix, right? They're creating life. They're creating life. They're reprogramming it their own needs. Residual potential risks of DNA in vaccines. Right from the FDA website, potential risks of DNA in vaccines. Residual DNA in vaccines derived from tumorigenic cells. Oh, I got an idea. Let's grow vaccines on cancer cells. Never mind that you can't actually get the cancer cells out of the vaccine and you'll shoot them right into the victim who will get cancer. What a bunch of assholes. Residual DNA in vaccines derived from tumorigenic cells, including those transformed by AD5, can pose potential risks to the vaccine recipient in two respects: oncogenicity and infectivity. In other words, it will cause cancer or it will infect them in another way, which is what we've been talking about this whole show. Each of these biological properties must be considered and evaluated for each cell substrate. The cancer gene of the cell substrate DNA has been considered to be due to several mechanisms. First, the residual DNA could have dominant activated oncogenes that could exert their effect following expression in recipient cells. Okay, what does that mean? It means the cancer cells they're shooting into us through vaccination or any other method, like we said, insulin, human growth hormone, whatever, could be stronger and more, and their programming can take over the programming of our own healthy cells and cause cancer, just like the infectious prion reprograms the healthy prion and turns it into a pig. In the case of 85 transformed cells, the dominant oncogenes would include second, the incoming DNA could integrate into the host genome in certain genes, such as the P53 gene, which is very popular at this point, or the retinoblastoma susceptibility, RB gene, termed tumor suppressor genes. Oh, I got an idea. Let's do something that'll infect our tumor suppressor genes. In other words, the very thing that causes
right.
not to express cancerous growth in cells. Oh, that's brilliant. Termed as tumor suppressor genes, which are involved in cell cycle control, among other cellular processes, loss of function of tumor suppressor genes has been associated with certain human tumors. All right, then it goes on to say this mechanism for tumor development was initially described in chickens for leukemia formation by avian leukosis viruses. Talks about so many things in this article, you'd be shocked. Potential infectivity is the other thing. If the genome of the DNA virus or the other provirus of the retrovirus is present in the cell substrate used for vaccine manufacture, then the residual DNA has the potential, upon inoculation into the vaccine recipient to produce infectious virus from this DNA and thus establish a productive infection. A productive infection. Mm-hmm. What did they say above? What is a protective or a productive infection? Oh, that's right. The cells of human babies aborted were for economic reasons. So what the hell are they? Do they mean as a productive infection?
Ooh.
Well, maybe it's because we'll have to buy their medicines to fight the infection.
Wow.
Yeah. The assessment of the risk of DNA, both the cancer risk and the infection risk, needs to be considered, both terms of the amount of residual DNA inoculated and the concentration of the oncogene or infectious genome present in the DNA. One last little tidbit. In considering potential risks associated with the use of these so-called designer cell substrates, i.e. neoplastic cells derived from normal human cells transformed by defined viral or cellular oncogenes, or by immortalizing cellular genes, which I believe is what you call hell.
Thank you,
Patrick. Immortalizing our life is something that these transhumanists seek, and that will be hell for us, i.e. telomerase, etc. It says, a defined risks approach to the regulatory assessment of the use of neoplastic cells as substrates for viral vaccine manufacture, in evolving scientific and regulatory perspectives in cell substrates for vaccine development, the use of immortalized neoplastic human cells as substrates to develop recombinant viral vectors as vaccines also raises theoretical concerns. Oh, hear that, Patrick? It's theoretical. Theoretical concerns with regard to potential contamination with TSE/BSE, which is human transmissible form of mad cow disease. Those agents are possibly contaminated. So what it's telling you right there, Patrick, is since TSE and BSE are prion diseases, they're telling you right here, right from the FDA, that these vaccines are contaminated with prions that will cause TSE, which is transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, the holes in the brains the prions cause.
Guaranteed to open ya. The 57 millimeter Mark 110, 220 rounds. comes a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list as soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah.